This is Pure Decking for Tuesday, September the 13th, 1985, and this is the show about things that interest me. I'm Morps, and I like to play with buttons. So, and tonight on the show, we have, lost my Skype window, we have Heavy Metal, Knox, and Fox. Hey, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh. Guten Tag.
Yeah, so I have no station news, I have no programming notes, I have no feedback, I have no sanity. So let's just go right into
I have no fans.
Yay! Wait a minute.
This is the wrong show for that.
Fuck!
So you mean it's not Saturday? Oh, shit.
I need to start not drinking now.
Yes. No, you can drink on this show, that's fine.
No, because it's not Saturday, I have to work tomorrow.
I know that feeling. So, anyways, I thought we'd start off with Komodo hacker story. The guy, this is the guy on Pastebin who claims he's the hacker who got into the Komodo and Digicert? Let's see, or DigiNotar. That's what it was. It was DigiNotar.
Yeah.
Let's see. Just the slug lines from the article here. There's a hacker out there. It's from Tom's Hardware. There's a hacker out there somewhere claiming that he can issue fake updates to Windows-based desktops and laptops thanks to a set of stolen digital certificates. This means he has the potential to pump malware in a Windows update service and infect entire Windows user base. Bullshit. The attackers are not able... Okay, and this then they've got a quote here from Microsoft engineer. The attackers are not able to leverage a fraudulent Windows Update certificate to install malware via the Windows Update server, said Jonathan Ness, an engineer with the Microsoft Security Response Center. The Windows Update client will only install binary payloads signed by the actual Microsoft root certificate, which is issued and secured by Microsoft. Now, the article itself is a little bit longer and goes into detail, and it's got some quotes from the guy, and it's written in very broken English, and the hacker's going on and on and on about how smart he is, which is actually not that smart. But let's see. On the subject of actually issuing fake Windows updates, there are a couple of ways to do it. Most of them are not very easy. If you do have the stolen certificates like this guy says he does, then you still have to man in the middle of the connections. That means you have to, the guy doing it has to insert himself between your Windows computer getting its updates and Microsoft servers. That's a little bit more difficult than you might think. They have to somehow either redirect DNS or proxy your connection or be at the ISP level, essentially. The other way, if they already own the box, they could have replaced Windows Update with something that's been tainted. Malware already fucking earned Windows Update. If you've already got malware in the box, you've got more problems than you're getting bad updates. If he pwns a WAS server for a company, Windows Software Update Services, corporations can set up essentially their own Windows Update servers that sync up to Microsoft, and then they point all their clients at it. It's a bandwidth saving thing. And management issue. It lets you control what updates go out, which ones don't. Like if you don't want to push IE9 or something like that. And if you have the stolen certificates to sign the packages, then yeah, pwning a WAS's server could let you push the bad malware. Or you could pwn Microsoft itself at the source and pump the malware through their tools. So, given the way this guy's writing his boasts, I mean, if he really is the guy hacking into the root, hacking into CAs, I'm still not sure how likely it is this guy can do this.
Well, and here's the other thing. He just basically said, I've got your shit, so now they're going to immediately want to go ahead and reissue everything. So either he's stupid, which is very likely, or he's smart and he's getting them to reissue a bunch of shit so he can observe how they do it, maybe.
That could be the case. He's making all these posts like a script kiddie does. Which makes me wonder if it's misinformation, one, or two, if this guy's even the real deal. Maybe he's just friends with the real deal or something.
I want to know, why is it news to have fake certificates?
Well, it's who they got fake certificates of.
Now, well, and the other thing is, A, who the fuck installs Windows updates right as they come out? Half of those are damn near malware anyway, and they fuck your system up.
There's
if you're retarded enough to have automatic updates turned on and automatically installed, you deserve all the pain that you get.
Well, I tell you.
Especially when they used Avast to destroy the internet.
Yeah. Go ahead, Fox.
Especially because when you do that, you become my job security.
I know that feeling. Boy, do I ever know that feeling. But here's the other thing, though. If he's sitting there pumping out all this stuff, oh yeah, I can pwn Windows Update. If he's trying to get people to turn Windows Update off, there are updates you do actually need. yeah, you don't want them as soon as they come out, obviously. You want to let somebody else take all the brunt and pain of it, but you do need some of these fixes, especially things like the SMB holes, or, yeah. You know.
Well, they're there to fix some of Microsoft's earlier features.
Yeah. Well, as somebody who's taken advantage of many of these features to get root shells on other people's computers, legitimately, now it's my job. I don't want anybody to misunderstand. I get paid to do that, and boy, do I love it. Yeah, you do need some of these patches. But so you shouldn't really turn Windows Update off, but setting up a server, like a WAS server, so you can manage it, or just being aware and managing your own updates.
I just set it to remind me and manual install.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Because then you can.
And then I delete everything that has to do with Internet Explorer or Inbox.
Well, not only that, but you know, the other thing is too, you can just let it sit there for a couple of days, screaming at you while you watch the internet. Because if when you do get bad updates, because it does happen, everyone goes insane. And,
yeah.
You know, you don't have to. You will hear about it. All you got to do is just kind of listen to the tech news. You'll hear about it. So
yeah, when they did that thing that made Avast shut down your internet by doing random port switching or something,
yeah,
there were lines about outside every computer shop here.
I'd believe it,
because every computer shop here had been telling their customers to use Avast.
Ooh, well, here's the other question for you though: if let's say this guy really can issue bad updates to Windows Update and, you know, pwn every computer and turn every Windows machine.
Nobody's
out there
going to notice compared to the real ones.
Well,
really.
There's that. But here's the bigger question. If you really can do this, you could literally turn every Windows computer out there into a bot on your own botnet. Why would you tell anybody? Why wouldn't you just, you know, do it?
Sell it to the Russian, to the Chinese, I mean, for crying out loud.
Do it by opening a notepad on their screen.
No, make some money off of it.
Well, that's what most of them do. I've got a link about how some of these groups make money later in the show here. But, yeah, I just... It's like, why would you even brag that you could do it? If you could do it, you would do it. You wouldn't brag about it. Unless, like I said, you're not as bright as you want everyone to think you are.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah. Usually it's, I've owned, you know, 5,000 boxes. Here we go. I've done a DDoS. Okay, this is... How did I prove that I am a script kitty, but of awesomeness and power, not this, I think I can hack your shit and replace your certificates and get your box. No, prove it.
Well, I know plenty of people who know what's up who love to brag, but the way they brag isn't, haha, I can do this to you, neater, neater, neater. It's, haha, look what I can do. This is how it works. This is how it works at every level. This is how you can do it yourself.
Right.
That's an easy way to tell script kitties from the ones who actually know what's up. Because the ones who know what's up, they're perfectly willing to explain to you how it works because they want to show it off, right?
Yeah.
So, anyways. Yeah, all he does is brag on Pastebin. So, I don't know. I kind of wonder if it's misinformation. Maybe trying to lead people away from the real group. So, whatever. Next story. Let's see. This one's from Ars Technica. Sanctioned P2P lawyer fined $10,000 for staggering chutzpah. A federal judge has fined Texas lawyer Evan Stone $10,000 for sending out subpoenas and then settlement letters to people accused of sharing a German porn film called Der Gute Onkel. My German's not very good. I have no idea what that says, and I probably don't want to know. All without the judge's permission. In September of 2010, Stone brought suit on behalf of Mike Hague Productions against 670 accused file swappers, and he asked permission to take early discovery. Judge David Goodby said no. Instead, Goodby brought in the Electronic Frontier Foundation and Citizen Public to represent the interests of the DOES, since none of them had yet been named and had no counsel to speak for them. EFF and Public Citizen lawyers soon began hearing from people who said Verizon had turned over their information to Stone, and that's the kind of stuff you only get out of subpoenas. So when they asked when the lawyers asked the judge to find out what was going on and to sanction Stone if he had in fact issued subpoenas, it turns out basically this guy issued a bunch of subpoenas when the court had specifically told him not to do it, and he had gotten all kinds of information on people, was sending settlement letters after the court had said, you don't have permission to do that. These are still John Doe cases. So they fined him $10,000, and he has to pay the attorney fees for the EFF and public citizen, and has to tell the court if he had settled with anyone in the McHague case, and if so, for how much. And finally, he has to send a copy of Judge Goodby's order to each judge overseeing any federal or state court cases in which Stone currently has a hand, whether or not it has to do with file sharing.
So, the good uncle.
In other words, we finally are getting some judges who know what's up.
Yeah, their good uncle is the good uncle.
The good uncle? Oh my god. Yeah.
Du essen mein Scheißen, ja?
No sprechen Sie Deutsch.
Sehr gut.
Well, you know, the good uncle, what, that, you know, that's got to have a riveting plot line. Well, I wanted to point out this story because we're finally getting some judges who know what's up, or at least are figuring out what's up, and figuring out that a lot of these companies, whereas, they probably have a legitimate claim that, you know, their copyright's being infringed, and there probably should be something to help them with that. They're way out of line in the way they're handling it. I mean, it's, you know, personally, it's like if you get caught downloading something, like a movie, the worst case scenario, that movie is going to cost you $50 for the super high Blu-ray special edition or something, right? You know, normally they're more like 15 or 20. So, you know, whatever the most expensive version of that movie is out, I could see them going after you for that in court, saying, hey, you know, you owe us the $75 or something, which they don't want because that doesn't even cover the court cost. But that's, if you want to go with what's fair.
So. Well, they'll probably tack on court costs to that anyway, fair, but...
You know, that would almost be automated if they did
not
it
fair,
at
but
that
reasonable.
Level. If they did it at that level, they would just be able to take all the IPs and basically shotgun them into the court system, and the judge at that cost level might actually just auto-issue the judgment and say, okay, pay your $75, which would actually generate some revenue for the courts and for the movie studios at a bulk rate.
Well, and it would be fair. I mean, if you get caught downloading something, and, you know, if you're downloading one song track, what's it cost on iTunes? 99 cents. It's like, you know, send them a bill. I mean, really. But, you know, I that's one of the reasons people don't really give a shit. There was another Torrent Freak article. I took it out, how they keep making the argument on when they try to reform copyright, how they keep trying to make the argument that it's done from the view of corporate profits, and I kind of see where they're coming from. I took it out because I didn't think it was actually worth talking about, but this story ties into it a little bit. I don't, you know, it's like, you're right, the rules shouldn't be based on what makes the most money for the companies currently in power. It should be based on what's fair. Not that I'm against companies making money, far from it. I mean, I like having a job, but, you know, it should be fair.
Okay, when you actually start getting fines that you're asking for, they're more than the gross domestic product of the entire planet.
Yeah, there's some issues there.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. Anybody else have anything on that one?
No.
Nine. Okay. You're still going on. You're looking up that movie now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to put my microphone on mute for a bit.
God.
Well, according to the legitimate where you can buy it website, it's something about a teeny redhead. Yeah, that's about as far as I'll go on this show.
God. Welcome to 4chan. It will be your guide. Wow. Okay. Next story is from Information Week. This one's fun. The Obama administration on Wednesday appealed to Senate Judiciary Committee to increase penalties for hacking and to update current laws against organized crime for use against hackers. Obama's first had floated the wide-ranging changes to the 1986 Computer Fraud and Abuse Act in May. A lot of people bitched about it back then. They wanted a minimum 3-year sentence for anyone who got caught attacking critical infrastructure. And I cut some of the article out here where Patrick Leahy didn't want to bother with this, but the administration took it before the committee directly, and it says here they were pretty receptive to it, and they wanted to, they essentially wanted to move hacking into racket, into be covered under the Racketeering Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. So they want to turn hackers into, they want to go after hackers like they're organized crime.
Yeah, this is something that they've been doing, and they've actually charged people under this, not under the RICO Act, but they've charged them under a lot of federal laws, and then people are getting a long-term time in prison. If you want to go back to, like, Bernie S., one of the early, you know, like, cell phone cloning cases is basically what he got sent to prison for.
Okay,
you know,
Heavy,
this stuff,
I appreciate the on-the-spot research, but that's distracting. Stop it.
Okay. Well, you know, I was going on with the story, too. You know, it's called multitasking.
For those who are wondering, Heavy is posting links to porn in our chat room.
No, these are the screenshots of the
you got a good uncle.
Yeah. Anyways, as I was saying, you know, Bernie S. is basically one of those early cases where the Fed was just way overboard on the on, you know, the laws, and so I think this RICO thing is just out of line as far as that goes.
Well, you know, I really only have one thing to say on that. Thanks, LulzSec.
Yeah, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, that might even be like a false flag kind of a deal. Where they're using LulzSec, who essentially did nothing.
They're certainly giving them the excuse, aren't they?
Yeah. You know, it's, I don't know. Write a separate law. Don't use something that was meant for organized crime, which you still have an issue with, by the way, and you need to have that law separate for, and write a separate law for computer crimes if you're going to do it. And then you can charge them with both, because if it's an organized Russian mob that's actually hacking into stuff and DDoSing or, you know, owning a bunch of boxes.
Yeah, but the problem is they're not going after the Russian mob that's hacking into your shit and DDoSing. They're going after the kids in the basements and the garages who are just, you know, well, they're trying to be politically active is what they're doing. But they're not really, it's like, oh no, they took down somebody's website. What are most websites? They're essentially fancy billboards.
Yeah.
Whoop-de-doo.
Yes, that's
okay,
not critical infrastructure.
Took my backup and I uploaded it in a few minutes. There I am.
Yeah, if you know what you're doing, you keep a backup of your site. And if somebody defaces it, oh well. I mean,
yeah.
So.
It's, and you're absolutely right. They're going after really super low hanging, easy fruit that they can make headlines with. They're not actually fucking doing their job, you know, which is going after real criminals who are causing real injury to people. And that's my big issue, is you don't waste money and don't waste legislation time on shit that basically, if you would just use the existing laws, right, you can go out and handle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to make part of my point, when I said thanks, LulzSec, they were being very loud about what they're doing versus the guys who do the damage who are very, very quiet about it, which is why with the guy back from the first story when bragging about, you know, Windows updates and hacking the CAs, that I'm not sure how real it is because of all the noise he's making.
Well, and that's the thing. Is it a false flag thing? Is it something that's happening mysteriously well-timed for the bill being introduced?
Well, that's a good point. I don't know if it's false flag or not. I know we do them, but I don't normally follow them that well. I don't know. We'll have to get in on that. Maybe I can... Ooh, here's a thought. I'll just get myself recruited by whatever three-letter agency I want, and then I can find out all about it. Oh, then I couldn't talk about it.
They're hiring at various hacker conventions.
Yes,
so.
I know. I'm going to one at the end of the month. So,
yeah.
Like I said, if I really wanted to get myself recruited, I probably could. Which,
that's good.
If I wouldn't have to move, be a good pay bump. I'd do it. I don't care.
More money for the station.
Damn mm-hmm. right. I mean, it's like, oh, how can you sleep at night? Quite well, thank you.
Yeah.
Anyways. Let's see. Next one. This
on
one's fun.
Plush, brand new mattress.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, hey.
Mine is showing jagged metal at the edges.
Anyways, we were going to go to...
next story here. This one is just fun. Florida-based... This is Torn Freak story again. Florida-based hot... I can't speak. I need more beer, obviously. The Florida-based hot file hosting service... I did it again. The Florida-based file hosting service, Hotfile... Hey, I got it out. has sued Warner Brothers for fraud and abuse. Hot File accuses the movie studio of systematically abusing its anti-piracy tool by taking down hundreds of titles they don't hold the copyrights to, including open source software. And among other things, Hot File is looking for damages to compensate the company for the losses they suffered. And I cut this bit out. Hot File built a system for Warner Brothers to go in and take down content without Hot File having to manage every bit of it. And they're alleging that Warner has willingly taken down files without holding the copyrights, game demos, and even open source software. The false takedowns continued even after the movie studio was repeatedly notified about the false claims. So what they really did was Hot File built a system so that, as opposed to getting issued DMCA complaints and having one of their guys have to sit there and manage these things, because believe me, I know what a pain in the ass it is to manage DMCA complaints. I had to build an entire system for managing it where I currently work. So they built a system that would let Warner just go in and take down whatever they wanted under DMCA complaint. Warner was just taking down anything they, you know, literally anything they wanted without cause or reason. So now they're suing them, which is fun.
Yep. And it makes sense. I mean, if you're going to come in and build a tool for a company and then they come in and abuse it and actually hurt your business, then it is actually, I'm all for this. Now here's where my problem is. Don't build them the fun tool. Make them go through the work.
No. Heavy. As somebody who's dealt with this stuff, believe me, build them the tool and then follow the claims of abuse, because the amount of time and manpower it takes to manage DMCA complaints, if you have to do it all on your end, sucks. And It's much better to make them spend the time and money to remove this stuff, because it's their problem. Let's be real. It's not Hot File's problem that people are posting stuff to them that may or may not have the copyright of Warner Brothers on it. Go ahead, Fox.
No, just kind of serve them right. Give them a little taste of their own medicine for, random bullshit lawsuits.
Well, I mean, if they really cared about their copyrights, they wouldn't be pulling down this, that, and the other. They would actually be checking, is this our file? Yes, pull it down. That's too hard, though. So instead, they're just mass deleting anything that looks like it might be relevant.
I hope it ends up biting them on the ass, though.
I do, too. I mean, I'm on the receiving end of DMCA complaints all the time, and I've gotten them for printers. So I know they're abused. I get them with bad data in them. I get them for IPs that don't even belong to my network. I get them for all kind. I'll get them for times I go in and look. Nobody was logged in. Like, it's coming from a system. Nobody was logged in on that system. It's like you go check the network traffic. Yeah, the thing was actually off. So.
Yeah, that's some bullshit right there.
Yeah, pretty much. Which makes you feel bad about having to go out, when you have to deal with people who've gotten caught by the system. Because, I'd say a good 85% of them, 80 to 85% of them actually are legit complaints. But you get enough of them that aren't, that just makes you wonder whenever you get one that's, somebody really wants to argue with you.
Yeah.
Of course, you get some great arguments. I'd bring some of those up in story time, but I'm not going to worry about it right now. So. Anyways, let's see. Anybody else have anything on that one?
No.
Okay.
Damn the man.
This one's fun. It's from Tech Dirt, and I know, Heavy, you weren't very happy about me having a story from TechCrunch, but that's okay. TechCrunch is reporting on yet another patent dispute over technology found in the Nintendo Wii. This time, the company that's suing Nintendo is Think Optics. They essentially made something very similar to the Wiimote. And what's interesting is the dates involved. Of the three patents behind the dispute, two were granted in 2010 and 2011, and all three were applied for in July of 2005, 2 months after Nintendo first introduced the Wii into the public at
shocking that.
Uh-huh. And so the only point of this story is the patent system is broken. Duh.
Yeah, there's a... let's think. There's actually a way that... That citizens can go and work for the patent system and actually help to go over this stuff. And I'm completely blanking on where that is.
Well,
right now.
While you furiously Google that, it's just it to me takes a lot of chutzpah to go in where you're suing them essentially for the prior art. it's like, okay, 2 months after they throw out something at E3 that, then you file your patents, and then you go in and sue them for the thing they threw out at E3. If they already had a demo at E3, they beat you to it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's like, I just see that case going very interesting. It's like, no, sir, they're trying to sue us for the prior art. The prior art is what they're trying to sue us over. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
And did you find what you're looking for there, Heavy? Because if not, I want to move on.
Peer2patent.org.
Peer2patent.org. I've never looked at it, but it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
So, last one I've got on here is it's Forbes, and Fox sent this over to me right before the show started. Let's see. 5 workers filed for complaining about their jobs on Facebook will go back to work after the National Labor Relations Board ruled in their favor, affirming that workers can safely vent their frustrations about the workplace on social networks. One of the terminated employees complained to the National Labor Relations Board. The judge essentially ruled that employees were within their rights to converse among themselves about their working conditions. So, yeah, peer to patent. I'll copy that and throw that in the show notes here while we talk about
stuff. I mean, the bullshit thing about that is, I mean, that people don't realize that, yes, Facebook is a public bulletin board. Every fucker can see it. Yeah. And when you're bitching about work, your boss, or anything like that, they're going to fucking see it on Facebook. I mean, when you say, yeah, God, my boss is a fucking cunt on your Facebook page, and you forget that you happen to be friends with your boss on Facebook, you're asked not to come in the next day. It shouldn't be that difficult.
Well,
go ahead, Heavy.
I was going to say, a lot of these people that are on Facebook are, you know, in that 40, 50, or, you know, 60-year-old range, and they're people that are used to being able to go to the bar and bitch at the bar, and that's kind of the attitude that they have about things. So I'm not surprised that they didn't expect that to happen. They got blindsided by this thing. And sure, it's within their right to bitch. I mean, they should have that forum, in order to complain about stuff. So, I don't know. You shouldn't necessarily get fired for it. Now, granted, if you're fucking up at work, this might be the tipping point, to get you out of there. But
there is also, discretion. If you're going to talk with your other employees, maybe you should do it through things like private messages rather than, say, posting on their wall.
Yeah. There is that.
So, anyways, that was the last of the news I had. So, I think we're going to
music.
We're going to go into music break. We're just going to play a little bit of Patient Zero. Haven't played him a little while on the show, and his stuff is always good. So we'll go ahead and go into that. Let me just mute the Skype call in myself, and we'll play a little bit of Cyberpunk. Yeah. Okay. Bring you guys back here. Oh, did we lose Sard?
I think he ran away because of the feedback that he claimed that we had.
We had feedback?
No, it was when you added Sard, he has feedback. He's been having mic issues again.
Oh. Yes.
As soon as you added him to the call, it got horribly, horribly, unbearably loud.
Well, hopefully that didn't come through on the recording or the radio station.
Yeah.
There's a wild Sard has appeared. Sard, can you hear us?
I can. Can you guys hear me?
We can. Yep.
Excellent.
And you're not feedbacking horribly this time.
I believe yes, he's trying to communicate.
I jiggled the cable.
Oh, God.
More than three times, so I'm pretty sure it was considered playing with it, but I enjoyed every minute of it.
Heavy, you need to repost those images.
Oh, okay. God.
Yeah, one of the new stories was about German porn.
Der gute Onkel.
And, yeah, Heavy went and found examples for us. So,
God.
Yeah, yeah. So moving right along into Digital Dojo here. First tool up on the list is the Rootkit Hunter. It's a rootkit scanning tool. It's let's see. It looks for rootkits, backdoors, local exploits by running tests. It does empty hash compares. It's looking for default files, wrong permissions for known binaries, suspect strings and various modules, hidden files, that kind of stuff. So it's just another tool to run. Make sure your system is clean. I don't guess you can have too many of those. Until they start identifying each other, then maybe you have problems. But
what OS is that for?
It's a Windows.
Okay.
So it's also open source too, so you can actually see what it's doing. It's hosted on SourceForge. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Gotta love open source.
Always gotta love the open source. Next next one up. This one's from pentestmonkey.net. It's a neat little blog post. Essentially, it's a good list of various ways to go from having a local administrator account to domain administration account. And great on pentests, because a lot of times you'll end up on, various exploits will drop you out as a local admin on a box, but that doesn't do much good if it's on a domain, because you want to get to the really juicy stuff. So you need to be a domain admin, and this goes through lots of good ways of doing that. Mostly the token stealing is a common one. A couple of other things you can do. And it's just a good list of it. Quick place to start if you're looking for a way to do it. The other fun thing to do, a lot of places, like where you work, you want to cause some ooh. If you're having network issues and you wish to help at your place of employment, let's find better ways to put this here. And you think you can do it better than your IT people can. A lot of times they'll set you up with a local admin account on your box, on your computer, so that you don't have to get permission from them to install every little thing. It's just a management issue, really. And so this again, ways to go from local administrator to domain admin. So it's a good read. It's interesting. And if you're trying to defend against these tools, it gives you some ideas of, maybe you shouldn't log right into the box that somebody claims is hacked, because then you're giving them tokens. I've actually seen that performed, where they got into a box, got local admin, then emailed the domain admin and said, hey, this box has been hacked into. You need to check it out, spoofing some legitimate user's email address. So they log into the box and start working it. They steal the tokens from the domain admin, who logged in with a domain admin account, and escalate themselves up and make their own domain admin accounts.
Nice.
So
wow.
Combining these with a little bit of SE, and you get something really, really dangerous. So speaking of things that are dangerous, at least to poorly configured servers, THC Hydra has put out an update. They've rewritten a good chunk of the tool. Hydra is about the de facto go-to brute-forcing tool these days. So, THC.
Definitely. I definitely have to check that one out. The one I use, it was Brutus.
Brutus, yeah.
Yeah, sure, that's pretty old.
Yeah, it still works. And there's nothing wrong with your old tools if they still work. It's just Hydra's cool. You can actually automate a lot of it. There's some scripting you do. I don't get to play with the brooding tools as much as I would like. I really don't.
Hmm.
Especially because a lot of the times, if you have a poorly configured server or it's like an embedded device, something like Hydra or Brutus will just destroy it.
Right.
Fill its buffers up and the thing just falls off the network and falls over and catches on fire. I mean, it's just not.
Right. Well, I mean, if it's to be an appliance or something, typically those aren't the most beefiest of computers and definitely not made to handle that many incoming connections.
Yeah, you know, speaking of appliances, I've got something I could throw in story time, and I may. I may, because there's not much I can actually talk about with it because of, well, secrets. But, you know, it's one of those things where, when we get to story time, I'll talk about it because we're almost there. Next up, I've got this, it's from Usenix. It's a very nice write-up. It's from 2006, but it's still relevant. It's a very nice write-up of the underground economy. This is how your black hats and your virus writers actually make money. So if you're just looking for how they work, or if you need a primer on how to get started, this is a good place to start. So, and then the last thing in Digital Dojo. Oh, you know what we forgot? Sard, you just hopped on the channel. We need quick bad kung fu sounds.
Okay, I'm on it.
Like, no, dude, make bad kung fu sounds
with your mouth.
Oh, I have to do it with my mouth? This is a digital age. I'm looking for wave files right now.
No.
But you do so many good things with your mouth.
Oh,
he went there. Yeah, I totally forgot to have somebody start making bad dojo noises before we started the digital dojo. My bad. I'm sorry.
Oh, very dishonorable.
I'm sorry.
Commit the seppuku immediately.
All right, this is really going to hurt because all I can find at the moment is this old pocket knife.
Hello?
Oh.
And he's dead.
I heard hello, and then Sard went into there's a problem with this call mode. Because everybody loves Skype.
Well, yay! The day old Twinkie is going to take me a while to kill myself.
Just choke on it, Heavy. You'll be fine. Well, wait. You'll be that didn't quite work. And, Yep, there goes Sard again. This is going to be interesting to see. So he's going to get bits of the conversation. So,
yep.
Anyways, last tool in the digital dojo. This is up. I love the sound of my own voice.
Are we back? Like the entire call dropped right there for a second.
Well, you're back, but now with more echo.
Yeah.
Jiggle the cable.
Use fucking headset! Jesus Christ!
I am using headset. Shut the fuck up.
I'd love to, but it's echoing back into the call, and I can hear myself over and over again.
I think it stopped. As much as I enjoy hearing the sound of my own voice. Alright, last tool, Digital Dojo. It's from DanielMissler.com. He's got a very nice primer on TCP dump. It's a tutorial / primer. If you do any work with networking, you need to know this tool. This is essentially lets you watch the wire, and it is extraordinarily handy if you're trying to find, well, any number of things. One, if you're just trying to figure out what the hell's going on with your network, this thing's handy because it'll show you. If you need to watch for intrusions, you can actually watch the raw connections because it's. If you've got a tap set up on your network or even just like a dumb switch somewhere, it's pretty hard to hide the raw connections unless you're doing a ton of proxying. And that just slows things down. So, you know, if somebody's popping a box on your network and you suddenly see an IP from China Connect, having, you know, this is how you would see that. Or, you know, you could also write tools around TCP dump. I've actually got a few I've written at work that they're based on actually wrapping TCP dump in some Python scripts and watching for things. So anyways, that's the end of Digital Dojo. And so now it's time to go into story time. So it's story time with Morphs. And actually, I don't... Story time's pretty...
All I'm picturing is, here's Bob. Bob now has a giant dick because he took a pill. Buy these pills and you too could have a giant dick like Bob.
And yes, that's why we use that, because it's funny as hell. or, conversely, because it's me telling stories of how I'm a giant dick.
There you go.
Yeah. What I was alluding to earlier, we had a system at work that they had purchased. And I can't really go into too many details of what it really is on the air. You guys know about it because you all remember me going nuts when I broke into these things. But they were an embedded system, and they were used for displays through various places. And we had a conference call with them not too long ago and handed them back their own back doors, their own backdoor access accounts. And it's like, yeah, we need all these passwords changed because they suck. It's like, oh, we can't change those. It's like, okay, your systems have all these vulnerabilities in them. You need to patch them. It's like, but it's Windows embedded. It's not a full desktop. So that was an interesting phone call. And this one wasn't really planned, so I'm, you know, sorry. So what I actually planned on talking about, both in story time and in the topics for tonight, was adventures in Commodore 64 hardware. Again, I think I just lost my entire panel here.
No, you're good. I'm actually reading a page on the various ways of hacking C64 is to go do the various things that you're going to talk about in a second here. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. There's some other options than what you've used too. Which
There's so many options. But here's the thing. I have several Commodore 64s. I originally bought them for nostalgia, obviously, and they were cheap. But unfortunately, my 1541 drive is dead. And I only found that out because after much searching, I found some 5 1/4 disks and we're going to use them. I've actually ordered a device called the SD2IDE that lets you hook SD cards up to the Commodore in place of a 1541 drive. But there's some things that doesn't get quite right in the emulation, so you have a lot of older programs, specifically things like GEOS, don't work, which is annoying. So anyways, I wanted to get a real 1541 drive going. That way I could, you know, make some disk images and get back into some of these old issues. And my drive is dead, and I pulled it apart. And you would not believe the amount of information out there for trying to diagnose one of these 1541 drives. And essentially, the 1541 drive is interesting because it's actually a separate computer. The floppy disk drive is another computer, and it talks to the Commodore over a serial line. You don't, you know, the C64 doesn't control, you know, the floppy disk directly. Instead, it's talking to another microcontroller it's just passing data back and forth, almost like a mini network, which is pretty interesting design, really. And, you know, you got to think what the processors they were working with at the time, you know, 8-bit, 1 megahertz things, right? And, anyway, so mine's dead, and I think the actual main processor chip in it is what's dead. And I can't find any replacements for it cheaply without just buying another drive. And there's tons of them on eBay, so I might as well, as opposed to doing a hell of a lot of work, I might as well just get another 1541 drive, you know? So I pulled it apart just to see what was in it, you know, part-wise. And a chip I've been looking for so I can build a serial interface was actually in the damn thing. It's a 7404. I just, you know, they're nothing. They're like a dollar. I see. I just didn't feel like ordering stuff off the internet just to build a little serial cable. Because that's the other thing.
Kind of pull like a mini AT board or get one of those Raspberry Pis, run an emulator on there.
Oh yeah, it'd be easier to emulate. Sure. I mean, I could just grab a spare laptop, throw Vice on it, and be done. But dude, it's a real Commodore.
But you stick it inside the case though, so it would still look all legit.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that's the thing. I'm keeping the case, obviously. No, you don't throw stuff like that out.
No.
You know, worst case scenario, I'll make a MIDI controller out of it and give it to TAC. I mean, but you know, it actually had some chips I was looking for in it, so that's kind of cool. But yeah, I actually intend on the next few weeks here getting at least 2 Commodore 64s on the internet. And so that's actually rolling into the topics I had planned for tonight. And I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think there's actually a point in working with these old machines and getting them online, or do you think it's just nostalgia?
I actually like it for the fact that we actually can learn how to work with less. We can actually figure out how to make systems more efficient and get things much more compact as far as the software. Because frankly, there's a lot of bloat out there. And it ends up making things a lot more susceptible to being hacked, which is, so if you want to be secure about stuff, you make it real simple.
Well, hell, I mean, the Commodore was my first computer.
Right.
I mean, I was writing games for the damn thing when I was 7. So, I mean.
Well, there you go. So, anyways, I'm looking at, you know, I like it. I think it's definitely worth doing, and I think, you know, definitely getting it online and getting it up and running and seeing how far it can go. I mean, obviously, you're going to have issues with things like Flash and any kind of video, but you should be able to get any of the tech stuff up and you know, JPEGs and GIFs.
Oh, the Lantronics adapters. Yeah, I saw those. Heavy?
Yeah?
That Lantronics thing you just linked? Try to find the pricing on one of those damn things.
What are they, 150 bucks?
Oh, yeah, easy. Well, it's because they're rare now. They're specialty gear, so they charge insane for them. If you want to get a C64 online, your better bet is to look for the homebrew hardware, because it's at least reasonably priced.
Okay.
And actually, I've got the one I ordered. It's called a Comet 64. And this thing is meant to go with a website called CommodoreServer.com. And this is the most fun concept. It's essentially putting your disk emulation in the cloud. It's the card itself is pretty cool. It goes in the user port and does a serial interface into the Commodore. And then it has its own microcontroller, which runs a TCP/IP stack and converts what it gets into serial to send to the Commodore.
Okay.
So you're running it's on the internet. And instead of using like a host PC, which is what a lot of the home-built hardware does, like a null modem cable, that's actually what I wanted the 7404 chip for, was building a second interface without having to buy one. And because I want to try it with that method as well. But essentially, it runs its own IP stack, so you get an Ethernet port for the Commodore. And you can get it online. And it comes with some software for connecting up to their server. And what their server does is it actually emulates, like in this case, the 1541 disk drive, except it's all stored online. But these disks were, you know, at max a meg. So, you know, pulling the disk image down probably takes, you know, less than you know, 15 seconds. But it takes it several minutes to stream it from the network card actually into the Commodore, which I think is hilarious that your network card has a better processor in it than the PC itself.
Cool.
So,
I'm looking at a lot of different options. If people that are taking old Palm cradles back before they tried all the new WebOS stuff, and they're adapting it to the application, that seems like something you could find on eBay pretty easily.
Well, you know what surprised me is that, you know, I've done a lot of work with the Arduinos, and I would have figured somebody would have tied the Arduino and the Commodore stuff together or the Amiga or the ZX Spectrum. Because all these old 8-bit machines are fairly easy to work with by today's standards, and they're well documented. And I cannot believe that nobody's bothered tying these things together yet. So I might have to do some development on that front. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, getting old machines on the internet, do you think it's a waste of time? Do you think it's – I think it's actually useful.
I think it's going to work just fine as far as I don't know. I already said, you know, do it, have fun with it, document everything you're doing. and then there's, of course, the mod scene where people are going to do stuff. I'm actually looking at something right now where supposedly you can build a cartridge that will go in the cartridge slot and do it too.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, that's kind of, I'm intending to keep one Commodore stock and then the other one go crazy with the mods. Yeah, that's the plan right now, anyways.
Well, you know, and that's kind of a nifty idea. I mean, we were just at the convention. You know, it would have been nice to have something like that just to play with, because you'd hook it up to the back of the TV. You know, essentially have a computer all in one, you know, with access to the internet.
Well, I didn't want to bring it up, but I've also got a design for a Commodore netbook based off the C64D TV.
Yeah.
I've actually got most of the parts laying around for that. I'm just looking for a case.
Well, there you go. So,
but, you know, besides the home-built stuff, as well as, you know, you can buy a lot of the cartridges. Like, I bought a Comet 64, which I'm waiting on that. But there's several home-built designs out there. You can build a serial cable for a Commodore for about 30 to 40 bucks, depending on where you buy your parts. You know, it's like one IC, two ICs to really do it. But the other thing that's interesting is people have actually written operating systems for the Commodore, and the one that keeps popping up is Contiki. and it's actually got its full TCP stack. It's like, yeah. How did you get a TCP stack on an 8-bit CPU with less than a mega RAM? I mean, really? But they claim they did. So
that's the kind of shit that just amazes me. Talk about, like, scale-down programming.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Said, how do you freaking optimize that shit to run on hardware that small?
Well, it's like, how do you even get the thing to fit? I mean...
Right.
But, it's like, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking, if I ever have kids, I think the first computer I'll give them will be something like a Commodore or a Zen Spectrum. I don't think I'd let them play, or at least maybe lock them into emulators, as opposed to letting them play around on modern stuff that just kind of does everything for you.
Right.
So I really get an appreciation for what these machines are actually doing.
From what I've seen of children and computers, they're very intuitive when it comes to stuff. I mean, I just saw a little 2-year-old last night basically take her father's cell phone or smartphone, you know, with one of the Galaxy S's, and she sat there and she's like, no, daddy, bam, and she ran it better than he was doing. And I'm like, okay, you know, kids got this stuff down. They're going to be in the world of graphical user interface, so I may give an advantage to teaching them programming. It may not. I don't know.
I think it would be good just so they have an idea of what's going on under the hood there.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I guess we've bored everybody else to death with Commodore crap. So who else played the Minecraft 1.8 pre-release?
I have not grabbed the pre-release. I'm waiting for the full release.
Nope. Haven't played
it. I'm waiting for the full blown version. I figured, why get angry about some stupid bugs? And I'll just wait for the full thing. Right. Can't be that long.
Nox, have you touched the pre-release yet? Nox.
Nox has touched many things. I don't think the pre-release was one of them.
Yeah, I think he's falling asleep on us here.
Sorry. I've been muted for the last half hour.
Well, that...
Okay.
Der gut Uncle, ja.
Okay. I haven't touched the pre-release because I'm trying to actually build something up in a world here, and that would probably mess me up a whole lot.
All right, well...
Especially since I'm placing active furnaces and that kind of destroys everything.
Yeah, that'll do it. Now Heavy's giving me eBay links to Commodore. Stop it.
Yeah, this is good stuff, though. I mean, I'm actually looking at the cartridge, and that's nice. So,
Let me see what you got me linked here. This is the...
Is this the thing you already bought?
Oh, this is the one I bought. This is the Comet?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Well, that's more expensive than when I paid for mine.
Yep.
Huh. Well, I bought the kit because I don't have a problem soldering it together. So.
Well, and that's the thing. This is all pre-put together, but it looks really nice. And I don't know. You're gonna have to retouch up on this one once you get it up and on the network, and tell us exactly what you're able to do online with it.
If you look at, you know, he's got this example game of Group Zork, right?
Yeah.
I totally want to look into programming multiplayer games in BASIC on the Commodore.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine, especially if you do something on the... If you're able to use modern systems for the back end so you can actually handle some load, can feed these things? I mean...
Hey, man, throw me an emulator and I'll join you for that.
Well, that's the fun part. You know, the Vice emulator's free. And... You can have the Vice emulator emulate this exact device and get on Commodore server, and you just make an account with them. And disk images, well, we'll talk about that off the air. Don't you worry about disk images. We'll take care of that. there's plenty of them out there, and if I'm developing my own stuff, hell, I'll just give it away. I don't care.
Yeah. Well, no, this is good stuff, and this is the first system that a lot of people played around on and got online with, too, so that was the important part.
That's the other thing I want to get on some of the Telnet BBSs. One of the guys who shows up at the Newsreel show, Cycrix, he actually is running a BBS. I was checking it out the other day, and it's like, man, this doesn't feel right. I need an old TV with bad color and low resolution to really make this thing feel
color. What sort of TVs are you having?
No. I've actually got a black and white television sitting in my home right now, and that would be perfect.
Commodore black and white, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's one thing I've always wanted to check out is the old BBSs, because I wasn't into computers that long ago, so I don't
know. Oh, dude.
We'll have to get you up to speed.
it was the wild, wild west of computing. Most of ours ran Wildcat server software, but I know there was some other stuff out there. I never actually got to interact with it, but the Wildcat stuff was awesome. So
I'd also kind of like to check out a text-based browser. That'd be kind of cool, too.
Oh, hell, boot up any Linux Live CD and just pull up your terminal and type in links.
Yeah, I've heard of that. I haven't checked that out yet. I guess I ought to do that. It just sounds kind of cool. Retro.
It's retro, and it's actually really handy if you've got a site you need to just pull the text off of, because like none of the scripting works, right? So you can just do whatever you want if you want to pull the text. You can also pipe it into things and do all the crazy, if you really need to do some scripting or something with it, you can. The thing you want to watch out for there is a lot of modern sites are so dependent on the Ajax and the JavaScript and the Flash that you load up a text only version of the site and you get the title and that's about it. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what I can pull off with this thing when I get the hardware in. Plus two, I've got an XM cable, I've got the SD to IDC, so I'm not worried about the disk drive dying on me. It's just a little frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be setting up. I'll essentially be tying these things to, I've got an old Pentium 3 laptop that I'm probably gonna use as the host for everything. And I'm just going to tie these two Commodores to this laptop and use it for the most part for everything. Unless with this Comet 64, because of the way it can load stuff from their servers, I may not need to. I don't know. So that'll be interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Looking at this Comet, it looks like they've got a little bit of a storage on there. So that may be where they're handling all of the...
Yeah, it's buffered into the card. Anytime you pull something down from their server, it goes through the card. Because the network interface, they've just got a standard Ethernet interface, and they've just got a microcontroller there, right? And
yeah,
they're just streaming that directly to the Commodore over the serial port.
But well, I think they've got the TCP stack buffered in there.
That's where the TCP stack actually runs, because the Commodore doesn't have enough memory to run it for this thing. But what that ends up doing is the TCP stack is sending data so much faster than that can send it through the serial port that it's got to buffer it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, so it's you, man. You're gonna be it'll definitely be a one page at a time and stick to Google's main page.
We'll have to do some filming. Ooh, I'll get the agent to do everything on the Commodore just for fun. How about that?
You know what? It would be interesting to see what kind of hacking you could do with an old Commodore.
That's a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be
well, you need to choose systems to hack into that are current with the Commodore 64, like the DMV.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right. I think we're past time to wrap up.
All right. So this is my challenge to the agent. Set up a few systems that are reasonable, and Agent Paranoia should go out there and hack his own system and show us how he did it with the Commodore 64.
I do want to see him exploit MS-0867 from Commodore. That'd be funny as hell. Actually, what you'd have to do is use it to remote control another system.
You're pretty much just asking the agent to go play with himself now, right?
Yeah, I think he is. There's an internet video for you.
Oh. Will there be another little mask as well?
Dear God, I hope so.
Oh. Dear God, things we don't want to see on Rule 34. Let's see. Promos. Check out RU's new Open Mic Friday nights. He doesn't record the damn things. You have to catch it live. And I don't actually think they're on Friday nights. They're kind of more whenever the hell he feels like it. So, yeah, just listen to the stream 24/7.
So, Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, he's been throwing them on the chan when he does them, but... Yeah, BSV and I have actually been on the last couple.
Well, okay, I'm not going to say watch 4chan for the next time we're doing a Galaxy 15 show.
Well, you know.
I need to get him access to the Twitter account is what I need to do.
Friday and Saturday, it's exactly. It's Friday evening, Saturday morning early.
Yeah, just listen to the stream all weekend long. We don't play ads, so don't worry about it. Let's see here. I have nothing every Saturday. Yugo's Newsreel on Thursdays. And, of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site and the Twitter handle. Anybody else have stuff they want to plug before I hit the music?
Well, we may not play ads, but we do play stuff only dolphins can hear, so good luck with that.